Today is Tuesday, September 29th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, what to expect in tonight's first and arguably most important presidential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
So this is the first time that we've seen them face-to-face in the same room, on the same stage, answering the same question.
An important vote is generating controversy in Africa. Also ahead, the latest on the COVID-19 pandemic as the global death toll hits a somber milestone. It's all on today's International Edition. Amid historic challenges of the deadly pandemic, its subsequent job losses, and racial injustice protests, tonight's first debate between President Donald Trump and his Democratic challenger Joe Biden in Cleveland, Ohio, could be a pivotal moment in a race between two candidates with dramatically different visions for the future of America. Joining us now for a preview from Ohio is VOA TV correspondent Carolyn Presutti. Carolyn, thanks for being with us. So tell us why both candidates' performance tonight is especially important, and also particularly because of the state of Ohio, where this first debate is taking place.
Absolutely, Lori. And it's twofold why this debate is so important. It's important because it's the first one. Voters have not seen these candidates much. President Trump has had a couple rallies here and there, but certainly former Vice President Biden has been virtual with all his supporters and most of his supporters. And so this is the first time that we've seen them face to face in the same room, on the same stage, answering the same questions. Secondly, it's important because this is Ohio, traditionally a battleground state, a swing state. Trump won this state by 8 points in 2016. He and Biden are neck and neck this time. Less than 1 point separates them in the latest polling from Ohio. And no Republican has ever won the presidency without winning Ohio. So it's a very important state for these two candidates to carry.
What are some of the topics they are expected to be talking about with moderator Fox News host Chris Wallace?
Well, there are actually six topics, but actually add one more just because of recent events. You know, we do have the Supreme Court. Court is weighing heavily on many people's minds now that President Trump has nominated Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. Being a conservative, and also if she is confirmed, that would mean the makeup of the nine justices would be 6-3, 6 leaning towards conservative attitude and 3 being more liberal leaning. The second thing is coronavirus, which affects all of us. But then the newest thing that is in the news would include the release by the New York Times of the information from President Trump's income tax returns and the fact that before he ran for president, he paid no income tax in the last 10 out of 15 years. And then the year that he ran for president, he paid $750. And the first year in the White House, he paid $750. So how does that resonate with your normal American? Well, traditionally, the average American pays about $12,000 a year in income taxes. And I spoke with some students on the campus of Case Western University, where this debate will be held. And one of them said to me, as a worker at a fast food restaurant, I actually have paid more than the president.
And what are some of the other topics?
Election integrity is a big one. You know, a lot of these states are starting early voting. Ohio's vote starts a week from today, just 1 week after the debate, and it opens 30 days before the election. A lot of people are wanting to get in their vote early. They're also voting by mail, other people in person.
So what are we hearing about how the two candidates have been preparing to face off in this debate?
Joe Biden was asked by a reporter just recently, what were his goals for this debate? And he said, just to tell the truth. When President Trump was asked how he thought the debate might go, he said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the debate. He said, I've been practicing for this on a day-to-day basis because I deal with these issues on a day-to-day basis. He says, I've been doing it for a long time, but not quite as long as Joe Biden, who's been in politics for 47 years.
Okay. And set the scene for us there around the Samson Pavilion. Is it crowded? Are there protesters? Is there a lot of security? What's going on?
First of all, the pavilion is enormous. It takes up an entire city block, and there are huge banners that are hung from the top of the building that say Debate 2020 in red, white, and blue. There's a large field to the front of it. There are risers set up for various reporters to do live shots, for people to do live broadcasts from there, newscasts from there. And then there is extreme security. I have not seen this many law enforcement officers in a long time. We not only have the Cleveland police, who have been told they cannot take today off, they have to work 12-hour shifts, which they've been doing for a couple days now. And then they are joined by 300 members of the Ohio National Guard just to keep the peace. There are planned protests today, but the real question is, how close can those protesters get to the venue? Not close at all, because there are enormous chain link fences, there are snow fences, there are concrete barriers, and many streets blocked off around this pavilion that no one can get through.
VOA correspondent Carolyn Pursuti, thank you so much. With just 35 days to go before the U.S. presidential election, battle lines are being drawn over President Donald Trump's nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden called on Republican senators not to confirm her before the November 3rd election to allow U.S. voters to have a say, a position that key Republican leaders are dismissing, Michelle Quinn reports.
This week, Judge Amy Coney Barrett will meet with U.S. Senate leaders in advance of her confirmation hearings to be the next Supreme Court justice, a lifetime appointment. Majority Republicans appear to have the votes to confirm Barrett, and President Donald Trump says it's important to have a full bench of nine justices in case they are called on to decide the outcome if the November 3rd presidential election is in dispute.
I think it's better if you go before the election, because I think this scam that the Democrats are pulling, it's a scam. The scam will be before the United States Supreme Court. And I think having a 4-4 situation is not a good situation.
Trump has warned, with little evidence, of widespread voter fraud involving mail-in ballots. And if Republicans challenge the election in court, the case could go to the nation's top court, where Judge Barrett's vote could prevent a tie. In a recent New York Times Siena College poll, 56% of Americans said the next president should choose the nominee. Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential nominee, called on Republicans to let the voters pick the president before confirming the next justice.
Just because you have the power to do something doesn't absolve you of your responsibility to do right by the American people.
While some Democratic senators say they won't meet with Judge Barrett this week, others, like Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, say they will question her conservative credentials and her opinions about health care and abortion rights.
We can slow it down, perhaps a matter of hours, maybe days at the most, but we can't stop the outcome. What we should do is to address this now respectfully.
Durbin said Barrett should recuse herself now from any decisions the court may face regarding the 2020 election. But Mike Lee, a Republican senator from Utah, disagrees.
Whether she recuses in this or any other case is up to her, and is up to her in consultation with her colleagues, her staff, and the rules at play.
With a seat now open on the nation's top court, an already contentious presidential race has become even more high stakes. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
As the world's attention is focused on the presidential election here in the U.S., another important vote for a key position is generating controversy in Africa. Chadian politician Moussa Faki Mahamat is running unopposed for re-election as chair of the African Union Commission. Critics say his run is undemocratic, and they're seeking to extend the nomination deadline to November. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The uncontested race has provoked outrage from observers of the 55-member African Union, who say the AU is failing to represent the needs of the continent's 1.3 billion people. Critics of the Ethiopia-based organization are lobbying for the vote to be postponed for at least 6 months to let more candidates come forward. Moussa Faki Mahamat, the former foreign minister of Chad, has held the post since 2017. Safo Abubrese, author of a petition by the Coalition of Supporters Unions of Africa, says the AU postponed the vote 4 years ago when there were only three candidates for that seat. At the time, the AU said that wasn't enough. Abubrese spoke to VOA from Accra via Google Hangouts.
How come that 4 years down the line, at the same time, we are having only one candidate And people are telling us that that is representative enough. If three wasn't representative enough, how can one be representative enough? How can we go this way when we are preaching democracy throughout all the 55 African countries? When we are telling the people of Africa that we want to go the democratic way.
Analyst Liesl Lovaudrin of the Institute for Security Studies says this vote, cast by African heads of state, not by the general population, is important.
It's a very important position. The AU Commission chairperson also has to represent the continent on the world stage, basically, when it comes to Africa's relations with the European Union, with China, with the US, with the UN. And he has quite a lot of leeway, I would say, although the African Union is an intergovernmental organization, so which means it's not the EU where, you know, the organization can actually tell member states what to do.
That's why, says Pan-African activist Daniel Mbonu, it's critical to get a leader who truly represents the continent. Mbonu says he supports the petition to delay the vote. He spoke to VOA from Nairobi via Google Hangouts.
He has displayed a lot of incompetency in the organization and running of the African Union organization. At the same time, he has been unable to address issues that are facing people of African descent around the world. And there have been allegations of massive fraud at the African Union, corruption, nepotism, which governs the appointment of people to different positions. Over the years, we have seen that the African Union has failed to attain the objectives that it was founded on.
So if not Mohammed, then who? Critics say one candidate, the AU's former ambassador to the U.S., a Zimbabwean national, has been sidelined after she was removed from that position last year. Both critics also allege the AU has been heavily influenced by former colonial leader France. Since 2002, four of the five commission chairpersons have come from Francophone nations. Again, Abba Brice.
Just by the uproar that came around after, the purported sack of Madame Marikana Shechiobo-Ripam, I would say, and my organization says, that Faki Mahamat is a failure. He is not somebody that should lead Africa for another 4 years. And we want a change. Now, come to think of it, Madame Arikana Chiombo-Ripau herself has filed an application for nomination to become a runner for that same position. And we have a situation where her nomination has gotten lost at the AU headquarters. And that is very, very strange.
AU members have not been able to meet in person in recent months because of the global coronavirus pandemic. Abba Brice says the petition to delay the election has garnered 16,000 signatures. If granted, the vote will be moved to early 2021. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
COVID-19 has now officially killed 1 million people globally since the virus emerged 9 months ago in China. A top World Health Organization official is warning that the global death toll could double to 2 million before a successful vaccine is widely available if concerted action to curb the pandemic is not taken. In the United States, the number of cases rose in 27 states for two straight weeks. Joining us now for the latest is Dr. Arthur Kaplan, biomedical ethicist at New York Langone Medical Center. Thank you so much for being with us. So what are you observing with the latest surge here in the United States?
We're seeing an uptick in many parts of the U.S., but other countries, Canada, don't seem to be seeing the same rate. So something's different here than is going on there. I also think part of the uptick is just cold weather, moving back indoors, people going back to school, people going back to work. That's just more people being in smaller spaces, more confined spaces, not outdoors, not having the same ventilation. So some of it is we're not masking as much as everybody else. We're not socially distancing. We're not doing the behavior things that we should. And some of it is, I think, seasonal. And it isn't just, I said cold weather, but I also think it's we're back to school. We're back to events, work that have us closer to one another. Back on the subway, back on the bus, back on mass transit, a little bit more flying. So I think that's the picture here.
Is this a sign of what's to come? Do you expect it to get potentially a lot worse as we head into flu season?
I do think things are going to get worse. I hope they don't get a lot worse. I think they will get worse. Just again, contact, people being indoors more. Some states, Florida, Arizona. They're so tied to tourism that they're not willing to say things like, let's close our restaurants. So they're going to be, I fear, hotspots as people try to go on a vacation, get out of the cold, which living in Connecticut, I understand, but more dangerous this year. Other issue is depends on who becomes president. So Trump has shown us what policies he's going to pursue, and he tends to downplay the outbreak, at basically saying, I'll accept more sickness, I'll accept more death, but I've got to keep the economy moving. I can't take that hit. It's just not acceptable. And Biden, I think, a little more public health oriented, saying we can restrict a little bit the economy, if you will, to protect lives. So I think there's a political choice that's going to forecast what happens.
Do you think that could actually impact the number of deaths?
Yes, I think we will see deaths go up along with cases. There's a little bit of good news here, not all grim. Physicians and hospitals are better prepared than they were last March in the U.S. to manage a surge. And so there's more equipment out there. It's not perfect. And doctors and nurses, particularly in the areas that were hard hit, like New York or Detroit, are better prepared to try and treat these patients. They know how to use the ventilators better. They know how to use certain medicines that seem to be a little bit helpful. I'm expecting a few more medicines to become available, so that could help diminish the death rate. Obviously, nobody wants to be in an ICU getting pumped up with an experimental drug, but the situation is a bit better than it was in terms of care of the very sick.
When we hear about the concerns over COVID-19 cases rising and colliding with flu season, is the concern that it makes people more vulnerable, or is the concern that it's going to overtax the health system?
I don't think there's data that flu makes you more inclined to get COVID. I'm sure if you got them together, as it just happened by coincidence, it wouldn't be a good thing. That's not a good situation. But I don't think if I have the flu, I'm more prone to get COVID is true. I think they're different viruses and it's all exposure. That said, it does seem to me that flu takes a toll as its own death rate every year, usually in the tens of thousands of Americans, and it takes a toll worldwide as well. And I worry that a lot of people may not get their flu shots this year, and even though they're not perfect, they help. And I think children are missing some of their shots.
Should we expect a long winter and the potential for COVID-19 to be here for the foreseeable future?
So I think this winter, let's say starting in December and rolling through beginning of March, is going to be one hell of an interesting time in the United States and some other countries in the Northern Hemisphere. We could see some resurgence of COVID in Europe. And we've already seen a little bit of that in France and Italy, where they had outbreaks. They tamped them down, and now they're coming back. And they face many of the same challenges of cold climates, going back to work indoors, going back to school indoors. But the reason I say it's going to be jumping is I think we'll see flu rattling around, as it always does, but maybe not as bad because more people are wearing masks. And that does help diminish the flu, too. More people are staying home. You know, if you looked at Australia in the Southern Hemisphere right now for flu, it's not terrible. It's because some of the measures that help COVID help flu, even if you miss your flu shot. We'll see. As I said, more medicines for treatment are coming on board. Maybe we'll get a few more by December, January. I'm not looking for a vaccine for everybody by then, but we may see an emergency vaccine for healthcare workers that may roll out. It may be partly effective, hopefully safe. It may not be the world's best vaccine, but I could imagine high-risk people working in nursing homes or some people working in the middle of a bad outbreak getting vaccinated and reducing their death rate as healthcare providers. I think we'll be more sophisticated about tricks that might tamp down the worst of the surge like we saw back in March.
Dr. Arthur Kaplan, biomedical ethicist at New York Langone Medical Center, thank you so much. Today is World Heart Day, and the World Health Organization is reporting tobacco causes 20% of deaths from coronary heart disease. It says it's more important than ever to quit smoking during the current COVID-19 pandemic, as tobacco is a major risk factor for death. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death on Earth, killing an estimated 17.9 million people every year. The World Health Organization reports smoking and secondhand smoke are responsible for nearly 2 million of these deaths. Director for Health Promotion at WHO, Rudiger Kretsch, says smokers should take heart. All is not lost. He tells VOA even lifelong smokers who quit their deadly habit can prevent dying prematurely from heart attack or stroke.
And that's the good news. if tobacco users take immediate action now and quit, then their risk of heart disease will decrease by 50% after 1 year of not smoking. So you can, if you quit smoking now, you can have immediate health effects.
Besides tobacco use, major risk factors for heart disease include lack of exercise, unhealthy diet, high blood pressure, cholesterol, obesity, and being overweight. WHO also warns high blood pressure and heart disease increase the risk of severe COVID-19. Krech says people are beginning to understand that smoking during a raging pandemic is not a good idea. Insert actuality intro, there are about 400 million outro, more severe symptoms.
There's about 400 million people who want to quit smoking because of COVID-19. They now realize that a pandemic like this, which is a respiratory, in the respiratory tract, actually, you're more vulnerable and you will actually develop more severe symptoms.
While it is not easy to quit smoking, tools such as nicotine patches are available to help. WHO warns against using smokeless tobacco, which every year, it says, causes around 200,000 deaths from coronary heart disease. It adds e-cigarettes also raise blood pressure, increasing the risk of cardiovascular disease as well as COVID-19. Krech says governments can help people quit by creating communal smoke-free zones, banning tobacco advertising, and raising taxes on these deadly commodities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
Pi is an ancient mathematical constant that equals approximately 3.14, and it's considered to be the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. Astronomers led by researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology say they have discovered an exoplanet they nickname Pi Earth. It's a nearly Earth-sized rocky planet that travels about 81 kilometers per second to orbit its red dwarf star once every 3.14 days. Officially, the planet is known as K2-315b since it was initially discovered from data gathered by NASA's K2 mission of the Kepler spacecraft. The exoplanet was confirmed by observations made with ground-based telescopes in Chile and the Canary Islands. The astronomers, writing in the Astronomical Journal, say the planet orbits its sun so closely its surface is thought to be quite hot. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. At the UN General Assembly in New York, members have been urging stronger and more robust efforts toward the 17 sustainable goals and 169 targets for the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, which is not on target to meet its goals on issues from climate change to gender equality to ending poverty. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Jeffrey Sachs, Columbia University economist and president of the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network, who argued the relevance of the goals 193 member states signed onto in 2015 are more relevant today than ever.
Well, definitely SDG 3, which is health for all, would be at the top of the list because we're in a pandemic. And we know that countries that have good public health systems have suppressed the pandemic. Countries in Asia, for example, I'm thinking of Korea or Taiwan or China or New Zealand.
How's Africa doing?
Fortunately, Africa has not yet had the worst of the world's experience. That's been in the Americas and Western Europe. In many parts of Africa, there's been pretty good control so far. So I would say to my African friends and African governments, keep at it, wear face masks, keep the physical distancing, keep track, test people, help people to safely quarantine or isolate.
You've been talking quite a bit recently about SDG number 4, quality education for all.
That is the most important of all the goals, actually, is to help build our children's futures. But it's especially urgent this year because the schools are closed, because education has been disrupted by the pandemic. So we need to find ways to have safe schooling for our kids and to make sure that all kids are getting proper education. This was Africa's principal crisis, probably even before COVID-19. Too many kids not able to learn up to their potential because poor countries in Africa have not been able to provide enough schoolrooms and teachers and facilities up through the upper secondary level, which should be free and available for all children. So I've been calling for years for more financial help for Africa, for example, from the European Union and others, so that we could say honestly and truly, every child in Africa is going to get an education at least through the upper secondary level, because that's what they need for their future.
What's next in your list of most urgent SDGs at this moment in time?
SDG 13, which is climate change, because if we don't move on this, it's just disaster. We have wasted decades. The big players that are causing the climate change are the United States, China, the countries in the Gulf that produce all the oil. This is where the big emissions are coming from that are changing the climate, and this has to change.
Closely related to that are SDGs 14 and 15, which essentially call for nations to protect the world's ecosystems.
We're killing animals everywhere. The number of big mammals in Africa, or the number of insects or amphibians or reptiles or other classes of animals, is diminishing tremendously because we're chopping down the rainforest, we're polluting the habitat, we're changing the climate so that other animal species and plant species can't survive properly. So SDGs 14 and 15 say, in essence, for God's sake, take care of our planet and our biodiversity, so that we don't destroy the very life support systems, our food chains, our crops, our forests, and the millions and millions of species with which we share the planet.
So that's your message to the movers and shakers at the UN General Assembly, huh?
It is my constant refrain.
You sound just a bit brokenhearted.
Well, I'm not brokenhearted, but I am a little bit peeved, because governments should be there for their citizens and for the world. No country first. Everybody in this together is the truth of how the world works. And so this is what we need to do, and we need to keep up the fight to get that done.
Jeffrey Sachs, president of the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network, speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips. And K-pop superstars BTS have announced their new album, B Deluxe Edition, will be released on November 20th. The new album follows their record-breaking single, Dynamite, which topped the Billboard Hot 100 chart for two consecutive weeks. The group will hold an online concert, BTS Map of the Soul 1, on October 10th and 11th. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Bungani, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.